Hey, Rich, it's a pleasure, man. My goodness, I love Maine. I'm originally from Massachusetts.
That's right. You're a Holyoke, Massachusetts guy, right?
Exactly. I was a Holyoke drummer. We moved over to Hartford, Connecticut. So I spent all my youth on the East Coast.
Well, and you also spent significant time in the most famous group of session musicians in the history of popular music, the Wrecking Crew. Your story now being told in a documentary that I just can't wait to see. And it's kind of done by one of your own, in a sense, that Tommy Tedesco's son, Denny, has put this whole thing together.
Denny has been a director of commercials for some time, and his brother Damon is one of the great engineers who did the Super Bowl lately, and on and on and on. But, you know, unfortunately, Tommy passed away. He was a cancer victim. And so Denny decided to do this film as a tribute to his dad. And he's been working on it 17, 18 years. And we got together at the very beginning at a little studio in Glendale, and we started a little round table, and that started off the whole thing. And now it's amazing, because I was at the Amoeba record store yesterday for a major turnout, because the film, The Wrecking Crew, had its official release date on DVDs and Blu-rays, et cetera, and we must have signed, I don't know, 400, 500, 600 autographs. It was just amazing time in Hollywood.
Well, it's an amazing story. I mean, you guys played for everybody in the music business, 150 top 10 hits, 40 number ones. You played on 8 songs that won the Grammy for Record of the Year, including at one point a stretch of 6 years in a row where you played on the Record of the Year. That's pretty remarkable.
Exactly. And I was totally shocked, because we did do Glenn Campbell's Not Gonna Miss Her, I think it's called.
Right.
That was Record of the Year. That was my 8th Record of the Year. I didn't think I'd ever get any more of those.
Well, it's amazing stuff here. And the people you've worked with along the way, the talented folks in the Wrecking Crew, which, by the way, I understand is a name that you came up with.
That's exactly the truth. I was working for Walt Disney as an actor, and at one point we went in to do some work on a film. I believe it was Herbie the Car, and the conductor, he started talking to us, because we were the new kids on the block, so to speak. He had no idea that we were doing everybody's records. We were doing hundreds of commercials, television shows. We were doing everything. And this poor guy was doing his best to talk to us as a bunch of kids in Levi's and T-shirts, and trying to explain that we're going to slowly try and rehearse some of this music. And there's one scene, we're going to use some of your rock and roll music, et cetera, et cetera. And we accidentally, the lady that hit the click track, we played it perfect. And the producer, when he finished, the conductor rather, said, "My God, how did you guys do that? It was perfect. I wish we'd have made it." And Tommy Tedesco, in his own wonderful way, stood up and said, "Well, sir, we practice a lot during the day." And that became one of the byphrases that we always used when producers would say, "God, that was great, guys. How did you do that?" Somebody would always say, "We practice a lot during the day."
Well, you're part of Phil Spector's Wall of Sound, and I think you could easily make the case that your drums at the start of Be My Baby by the Ronettes might be the most iconic drum beat in the history of rock music.
It's pretty incredible. I mean, even to me, I can hardly believe it. But and I tell people, one of the funny parts about it is that if you listen to Frank Sinatra's "Strangers in the Night," you'll hear the very same beat done very quietly. "Strangers in the Night." ba ba, boom, ba 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 ba. And of course, all the years I spent with Nancy Sinatra was 33 years doing all his stuff, her stuff. And then I was almost 11 years with John Denver doing all of John's major hits. What a sweetheart of a guy.
You work so much with Brian Wilson and the Beach Boys as well. It's been an interesting journey for Brian through the years, the new movie based on his life. And do you still keep in touch with Brian after all these years?
I just saw Brian. I was working on a documentary at a studio in Hollywood where Brian used to do most of the records. And when we finished the documentary, I was in a big studio. The producer of this particular documentary said, "Hal, there's some people over here who want to say hello to you." And he took me next door, and there was Brian and his wife, Melinda. And we had a great get-together, took some nice pictures together, or at least the producer did of that documentary. It's a documentary on the studio called, today it's called East West. But in those days it was called Western Recorders, put together by Bill Putnam, a tremendous electronics guy of many years ago, and he was the guy that built the United Western Studios in those days.
We're talking with Hal Blaine here on Downtown. Hal, I wanted to ask you about one of the most iconic recordings you were a part of, Simon and Garfunkel's The Boxer, and the incredible drum work on that. Can you tell the story of where and how you set up your drums to get that sound?
Well, you know how these stories get told from one to another and the things turn around. What happened was that we were recording in New York at CBS up on the 7th or 8th floor. It was a Saturday or Sunday. Building was closed, and we were working on this song. We had done the track. And there was a feeling that something I wanted to do on the end of the song, where the chorus starts singing la di da, bang! I wanted an explosion to happen there each time. So Roy Halley was the great engineer in those days, a terrific engineer, wonderful guy, and he used to walk around and clap his hands together and until he heard a natural echo somewhere. When he might have been in the corner of a room, might have been in the center of a gigantic ballroom. Whatever it was, as he approached the elevator door and he clapped his hand, he heard what he wanted and he said, "Put the drums right here." And the guys brought my drums in, and we said, "Here we go." And I had I'm wearing a headset, of course. Nobody around, nobody near me. So anyone who was near me didn't hear what I was hearing in my headset. All they heard was the explosions each time, and I was listening to la-di-da, bang. And at one point, in perfect synchronization, as I was coming down on this explosion, the elevator door opened, and there was a security officer standing there. And this was a Saturday or Sunday. Nobody's supposed to be in the building. And he had the look on his face like somebody just killed him. And, you know, New York and Chicago, some of those places were famous for that. They never knew when they were going to get a shotgun blast. And so the door opened as I came down crashing these drums. And the guy had the look on his face of, "Oh, no, I just died." The doors closed, and that was the end of it. He was gone, and we never saw him again. That got on the record, but what the story that came out was that somehow they heard elevator, and they wanted. There were many people asked me, "How did they get you down in the elevator shaft? Didn't you get all greasy from the cables? How in the world could you stand the noise or the heat or the running of the elevators?" I was never in an elevator. How did they get those drums down there? It's funny how those things build and build and build.
Hal, before we let you go, I wanted to ask you, too, about another legend about you, the rubber stamp, Hal Blaine Strikes Again.
Well, that's one of those stories that, you know, every once in a while, unfortunately, if I did a movie or something And they would call me 3-4 days later and say, somehow the engineering department lost the drum track, and so could you come in and redo your part? And then I'd walk in there, and this happened at 20th Century Fox. There was a pile of music sitting there by my drums. It must have, well, I'm, you know, almost 6 feet. This music must have been at least 4.5 feet tall. It was a piece of music for every, probably 70, 80 instruments. And so as I was slowly going through one by one, every once in a while I saw what looked to me, it kind of looked like a pickle with a little nostril on it or something. And I started asking people, what is this? And they said, that's the rubber stamp of Manny Klein, who was one of the great trumpet players. And once, and every time he did a recording, he stamped his little nose. He had a big, rather a large nose. He stamped it with the stamp that he had. It was just a simple circle that looked like a, sort of like a pickle with a little nostril on the end of it. And I thought, my God, if I had something like that, I could just breeze through this music, just letting it flap along. And every time I'd see my stamp, I knew what my part was. So that's how that started. It started with a rubber stamp, and I've done it. I've done it for the rest of my life, and it's become kind of famous or synonymous with me when I do a lot of these autograph sessions like we just did. People always ask me about my stamp. I'm sitting here looking at it right now.
Well, Hal, it's a real treat for us to speak with you. We can't wait to see the movie The Wrecking Crew, now out on DVD and Blu-ray. Hal, thank you so much for taking time to visit with us. We wish you good health and continued success, sir.
Rich, thank you so much, and say hi to all your listeners out there. Just have fun. Drive careful.
Thank you, Hal. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye. You're welcome.